Welcome back to the West of Scotland Pain Group. In this, the second programme of three, we hear a review of the McEwan Report and its relationship to managed clinical networks. The talk is given by Dr. Gavin Gordon, consultant anaesthetist at the Victoria Infirmary. For more information about the programme, please visit our website at www.wspg.org.uk.
I happened to be standing, I'm sure, in a theatre corridor perhaps a year ago, talking to Cammy Howie, when he raised the notion to me of why don't we have a managed clinical network for chronic pain. And he must have seen a look of complete bemusement in my face, and which did not disguise my ignorance. And he said, why don't I put you in touch with one of the civil servants in Edinburgh? And so that began for me anyway a bit of a journey, which meant more than one trip to Edinburgh for me as I tried to unravel what this concept meant. And really the bulk of what I'm about to say is to enlighten you on this, and unlike Mike, I'm going to make no assumptions here. So if I have said this to you, some of you already and before on more than one occasion, then I apologise, but the room's dark, the atmosphere's warm, and providing you don't snore, I don't mind. This was one of the starting off points for me, and I guess it does link to what Mike was saying. And for me, part of the issue has always been the inequity. And this is a map of Glasgow, and onto that I got our secretary to phone round and work out how many sessions were being devoted to chronic pain management in, it so happened to be Lanarkshire, because that's the one on our doorstep. And they've got a population of 500,000 for their health board, and a total of 3 sessions, which I thought was appalling, until I looked at it again recently and it's actually gone down. So for 3, read 2 or possibly 1. Glasgow does have a lot of sessions on a comparable basis for its population. And this is recognised, I think, in the fact that these figures could apply to any of the clinics in the city. There is a movement of patients across the boundary, and in our case, it's 25% of our patients come from Lanarkshire. And I don't think they get the same deal at all as the patients sitting on our doorstep. And indeed, the health board actually magnified this difference when they brought in things like psychology and physiotherapy, and initially anyway insisted that this was for Glasgow patients only, and therefore we were sitting looking at patients' postcode trying to work out whether or not we could refer them for psychology or physiotherapy. So they did always strike me as being some inequity, and nothing seems to have changed. This has to be seen in the context of what we've been doing. Now, some of what Mike said to you I think is more appropriate on a national basis. But what's happened locally, in a sense, mirrors that. There has certainly been some changes, there's been some progress, but if you were actually to be hard-nosed about it and say what difference has it made or how has it translated into real action, then the answer is probably pretty limited. But for those of you old enough, or as I get called now, senior enough to remember all of this, then for me the process began probably actually with the appointment of 3 or 4 new consultants, and that's probably not quite 10 years ago, but there has been an influx of new blood, and I can honestly say it's made a real difference. It's certainly provided a degree of impetus. But the health board set up a multi-professional audit group about 10 years ago, exact date I can't remember. This had a very wandering progress and didn't seem to have a clear remit until about 5 years ago, when out of it, or through it, became another group called the Commissioning Group. And this really was meant to take some fairly hard-nosed decisions. Part of that was to try and get our long-held desire for a pain management programme. And part of that deal was that we were to link more closely with primary care. We were asked to set up a raft of primary care guidelines which would make management of chronic pain in the community better, it would reduce the strain on our clinics and we would get a pain management program, I wish. That still hasn't happened. The last time I heard anybody talk about it, it wasn't going to happen next year, and as far as I know, it's not going to happen the year after that. And frankly, I won't be too much longer before I begin to lack any care about it, because I'll be long gone by at this rate. Glasgow is being reorganised, and while I have some sympathy with the aims behind this, namely there are far too many hospitals in a city this size, then the way in which the direction is going has obviously given us a lot of pause for thought, and this applies perhaps most appropriately to chronic pain. In other words, which bit, which group, which silo do we belong in? Do we belong in anaesthetics? Do we belong in rehab? And those of you who've been involved in this process will know the arguments have gone back to and fro about this. And finally, within all of this, are we still going to have access to the health board through these healthcare groups, through these health board groups, rather, I should say? Well, where does this all link to a managed clinical network? Well, some of it does have relevance. And the story of the MCNs begins in 1998, when before the Scottish Parliament was up and the Scottish office then got David Carter then to produce the Acute Services Review. And they identified certain themes which they felt could be improved. And amongst the things they noticed were that there were areas where there wasn't so much a lack of knowledge as a lack of translating that knowledge into a change in management. And this was, they happened to choose thrombolysis, secondary coronary prevention. These are all things about getting patients early thrombolysis. Everybody knew about it, but it still didn't seem to happen, and why not? That they identified some the issue of waiting times and how waiting lists seemed to vary, the referral patterns seemed to vary. All this meant that there were inequities in the healthcare provision. That this also had a geographical element to it, so that for some areas in the country there was woeful underprovision and some areas fairly good provision. And the whole issue of MCNs was seen as a way of formalising an improvement in this which would cross the boundaries, not just geographical, but also professional and to some extent political as well. The Scottish office, which later became the health department, then produced a number of booklets centred around this, and these are the things which lie at the heart of managed clinical networks. And here's the definition. A concept of an MCN is not a set design, but a way of working. It's meant that each model should be developed by a partnership of patients, clinicians and managers, and therefore be effective in delivering care in a local context. It's one simple way in which the NHS can be encouraged to be more joined up at local level. All very laudable. In practical terms, what is it? Well, it tends to focus on a disease or a condition. And the ones which are certainly up and running, or where when the last time I looked, are centred around not just diseases or conditions, but ones which tend to carry a national priority. And that's something you should certainly remember. Another way of putting it, it's best thought of as a clinically managed network and a virtual organisation that involves patients and service design and focus. This is an idea to bring people together, to allow them to function in a different way. And does not, and I repeat, not automatically come with money. Therefore, to go back to what Mike was saying, yes, you will get some money, but unless you're a national priority, then you are not necessarily going to get enough resources to answer all your problems. And these MCNs can be local, they can be regional, or they can be national. At their heart, though, is the notion that they must be managed. They cannot drift. They need input, they need structures, lines of responsibility, including a leader. And watching David Brent and John Cleese, and I'm struck by how much David Brent has influenced my style of management. Certainly, Much as I find John Cleese amusing, I struggle to touch base with him, really. The purpose of MCNs is to prove in patient care, especially access, quality and coordination. Key to this is the next bullet point. Work is meant to be undertaken that is evidence-based, for example, a signed guideline. And if you've followed the debate about whether or not we should have Enquist on board on this, then this is at the heart of it. This is an effort on our part to put together an evidence base which the MCN would then drive. And with that, we would be able to measure outcomes. There are some things which are a sine qua non. You cannot move without these. There has to be a quality assurance program. There has to be an annual written report. The networks must be multidisciplinary, multi-professional, and the patients are involved in shaping the network, and their improved care is at the heart of this. Well, why change? Why did they think this needed to be mended in such a way? Well, I alluded to that at the beginning when I talked about how some diseases, some treatments were simply slow or delayed or poorly implemented. And this can be revisited in other ways and other forms. It was felt to be poor coordination of services for some of these diseases, these problems, between primary, secondary and tertiary care. There was a lack of clarity in the roles. There were problems in identifying patients and delivering treatment to all of them, and a lack of knowledge about the benefits of specific treatments as well amongst clinicians as well as patients. And this is partly about keeping up to date, if you like. And there were concerns about the use of resources, not just the drug costs, but also of clinician time. In other words, how much of your time do you spend actually involved in patient care, and how much of it is spent around trying to organise things? What's the difference between this and what currently happens, which is simply this informal concept of networking? That is, you get on the phone, you discuss issues, and you try and sort them out. And the problem is that they tend to be about a single patient or a single problem. They are not necessarily focused. They tend to progress through the efforts of motivated and interested individuals, and if you don't fall into that category, then your patients may not do as well as the next man's. That, with the best will in the world, one person cannot deliver a comprehensive service, certainly nationally, probably regionally, and I would think also locally too. That there are gaps, inevitably. If this is down to one person's enthusiasm, then they can occur by unintentional omission. And they're usually directed towards a particular end, i.e. individual patients, but not populations. And they can be polarizing. In other words, some people seeing what goes on may wish to aspire to that particular model. Other people may resent it and go in a completely different way. Well, between 2002 and 2005, there were a number of MCNs set up. So coronary heart disease, diabetes and stroke are comprehensive. That is, they are throughout the land. Palliative care, epilepsy, vascular services tend to be less so, and in one or two instances they are regional. Money, as in central funding, comes with national priority conditions, and not necessarily because you've got 18% of the population suffering from your symptom. These are long life developments, and none of them have been disbanded, nor look remotely like doing so. And that whenever I spoke to the people involved in them, they all told me that the enthusiasm was crucial to this. It really does require a degree of impetus from within. So what about MCNs? Are they really that good? Are they the best thing since sliced bread? Are they merely just another passing fashion, which is what I'm told Madonna wears is called a bustier. I just found that out the other day. It's a new word to me. These are my impressions, and I should stress this. These are not things which I can say are clearly evidence-based. So they're certainly based on talking to people. That they seem to work well when they're a mechanism for implementing standards, sign or Enquist, whatever. Pump priming is essential. You cannot do this without money. But the one thing which people did agree on was that if you really wanted to get this going, enthusiasm will take you so far. But unless you get a manager in to help you, then you're going to struggle. And that's really what the pump priming is for. It in itself is not a direct mechanism for increasing a budget. Although you do have some control of your budget, in other words, you're given a lump sum of money and to some extent you can allocate it throughout your MCN, determined by what you see or what the lead clinician sees as the local priorities. And just to try and bring this together, it does fit neatly with the McEwen report and indeed the CARE report. But to start this, and then to get it up and running to a point where you would recognise it as an MCN takes 12 months. In other words, if somebody said to you, here's the money, off you go, you would not have an MCN up and running until 2006, beginning of 2007. What I asked them were the downsides. So when I went to see these people, or I talked to them on the phone, I went armed with three or four questions which I merely asked them each in turn. What were the downsides? What didn't you like about it? Well, they were all agreed that it was time consuming and there were surely a large number of meetings, but most of them were of the kind of personality type, I think, that just lent themselves to that, and they could see the bigger picture, they knew where they were going, and they were simply at least prepared to do it, if not happy to do it. They found some difficulties in engaging the GPs and including the voluntary sector. In other words, these are essentially people working in secondary care trying to enthuse and change the attitudes and minds of people working in primary care, and that can be a difficult boundary to cross. There can even be potential friction within the hospital setup itself, so that even within the one particular disease or one particular problem area, you may get generalists and specialists, and if the generalists see the specialist doing well, it creates resentments. And they all felt you really should get early successes. Three of the people I spoke to could see no downsides. The McEwen report, as Mike said, had 16 recommendations. And all I'm going to say here is that of all the 16, none of them sit at odds with the Managed Clinical Network. Some of them dovetail with it to a better degree than others, but none of them inherently disagree with it. And I merely put up some of the ones which I think are most compelling. I mentioned the fact there were three reports, and firstly McEwen's report, then the MCNs, and then the CARE report on building a health service for the future. The timing is pretty close, they all appear within the past 2 or 3 years, and there is a certain harmony about this, and this is no coincidence, this is because they're pretty much centrally central in origin, and with the exception of the McEwen report, they were pretty much under the aegis of the health department. So what links these conditions which have MCNs? Well, three of the five of them are national priorities. They all have future objectives. Most of them either didn't see disadvantages or they felt they were so outweighed by the advantages that they chose to ignore them. And the advice for a new MCN I've more or less touched on before. Palliative care was of particular interest to me, partly because it's obviously a pain-related topic, and partly because I felt it really had something in common with us. So I spent some time talking to the Managed Clinical Network lead clinician for palliative care, and went to see him. And what he said was that they had done well out of the national prioritisation. They had got cancer money on board, and this had helped them get the palliative care MCN off the ground. That the health board level that they were working at produced an MCN which worked at different levels. It wasn't just necessarily regional or national. In fact, they had little micro MCNs at different parts in the city. They had instituted guidelines, audit, research, and allocated resources and got teaching. They got a website set up and a regional pain tool, which is something you'll see in all the hospitals for patients under the palliative care banner. And like I say, they had developed 3 micro MCNs in the city. So what do I think about them? Well, I can tell you what they will do or may do, and I can tell you what they probably won't do. They will allow full implementation of the CARE and McEwen reports, which is another way of saying that they simply sit well with them. They don't disagree with them. They generate a proper dialogue with the community health partnerships, which include, as Mike says, not just primary care, but social services and the voluntary sector as well. And they allow more innovation across the spectrum of the problems. What an MCN will not do of its own accord is it will not get you national recognition or priority for chronic pain. It might get you a national strategy, but it won't get you a national priority. That it would put pressure on the boards into providing a high quality pain service with annual performance review, and the numbers in brackets are the relevant paragraphs in the McEwen report. It would force health boards to set proper provision. In other words, it would really unearth the inequity. It would show it up in its starkest light. It would provide resources to get an agreed standard, provide a Scottish referral service, provide a national data set. When I look at this, the elements here are obviously what the MCNs will not do, so that all of these elements here will not, in their own accord, get you what McEwen report wants in these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 instances. What did the CARE report say? It is a comprehensive look at how the health care of Scotland could be improved, how it could be changed, partly to meet changing conditions, how to address the changing in resources, and to improve the health of the nation, which, as I think becomes clearer day by day, is in a pretty poor standard. And you can see the focus here is a way of getting away from acute conditions towards long-term conditions, embedded in communities and with all the other elements that you would expect of something born out of 2005, really. How do they all match up? Well, in some instances, they all match up really well. A national strategy, yes. An integrated service, yes. Multidisciplinary, yes. Or multi-professional, I suppose I should say, as I keep being reminded. Primary and community care is involved. Standards and quality agendas, core, requires resources and educated staff, research and audit, stats, records. But they don't all dovetail. So the CARE report does not call for a lead clinician, and the McEwen report certainly does not have improved patient care as one of its cores. It doesn't involve patients per se. It doesn't call for a managed clinical network, nor does it precisely call for an IT electronic record. However, we live with this problem. It affects 18% of the population. There are historic underfunding, and CARE's analysis suggests that we may have problems now, but unless we do something, they may get worse. And all this has to be borne in mind in the light of the changing medical careers, the changing workforce, what's happening to the demography of the country. These, I'm sure you will detect, are my own thoughts on the matter and no more than that. The idea of, I think, which would gain us most currency would be to try and get pain into the GMS contract. This is what the GPs sign up to as part of their workload. Chronic pain is not in the contract of current GPs. If we were to get chronic pain management as part of the GP's contract, then we would move significantly forward. Put it another way, there is no financial incentive currently for GPs to tackle chronic pain. We could make good service provision, and we could decide on a local, regional or national approach. In other words, there are some things that we can do, some things which we obviously require the health department to help us with in terms of the GMS contract. Once you've got that, then you might be able to use a managed clinical network, which might deliver the hoped for benefits. And remember that you can only get this through certain adjuncts, improved technology and flexible working. And that is it. Thank you.